Well, hello there once again. Adam Lepp here with the Adam the Computer Guy radio program and mid-morning coffee break, which we broadcast three times a week here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Hopefully Santa was good to you. If not, well, good radio. That's a gift you can enjoy 24/7 here on WWGH. 2020 was certainly quite a memorable year, and not necessarily in a good way. We may talk about some 2020 memories on this program today. We have a combination of technology news, commentary from yours truly, because if you know me even the slightly, you're aware that I'm not one to shy away from an opinion, sarcasm, and of course, a bit of dry humor and outspokenness, and take a look at some offbeat, lighter, and sometimes human interest, positive news stories. I think we all need that, and, you know, laughter is the best medicine, especially during these times. We had some snow melted, and we got some more snow melted, and some more snow, and kind of get that in Ohio. It never really piles up too much. Maybe once or twice a year we get a big snowstorm, and enough to make a snowman or snow person or snow sculpture. Massachusetts, they also get snow. Some parts, the mountains, they get quite a bit. A creative and resourceful Massachusetts gentleman, his name is Dave Rothstein, used almost 2 tons of snow to create an 8-foot-tall sculpture for the winter solstice, 21st of December, which we recently had, beginning of winter and the least daylight of any day of the year. He's in Northampton, Massachusetts, and he unveiled this piece called Winter Solstice Snow Lantern, an ode to Mother Nature, in the front yard of his house. It's a hexagonal, 6-sided sculpture. It features bricks of snow arranged in a tower with a light inside causing it to glow. He said via Instagram that he wanted the piece to be hexagonal because it's the most common pattern found in nature. He said if you look closely, you will find them not only in beehives but on turtle shells, bubbles, fish scales, snake skin, insect eyes, basalt columns and gems, and much more. He is inviting people to come see the sculpture while it's still standing, which, you know, maybe cold in the winter in Massachusetts, but it will eventually melt, and that kind of stinks. He told a local TV station, "I have been sculpting snow for 20 years, but my main passion is introducing the winter arts to other people and getting people excited about winter and playing in their yards." I kind of enjoy that. You know, you are never too old to build a snowman or a snowwoman, snow person. No reason a snow man has to be a man. So, you know, snow human, never too old for that. It's good exercise. And as I've told people, I even enjoy shoveling snow. I really don't know why, but maybe it's just that feeling of accomplishment that the driveway is clear, sidewalk's clear, the walkway is clear, and you got it done better and quicker and earlier than any of the neighbors. That's part, I guess, the competition you have. You take pride in where you live. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1, on your FM dial and broadcasting online by the power and magic and overall fabulousness of the internet at WWGH1071.com. I would say that I'm pretty good at shoveling snow. I wouldn't say that I'm a very good swimmer. I know how to swim. I'm not really that into it. I'm not the greatest swimmer in the world, but I can do it. Just not something that I indulge in regularly. But this gentleman in Denmark certainly has swimming skills that are far superior to mine and far superior to probably anybody that I am familiar with. A Danish swimmer recently broke a Guinness Book of World Records record by swimming 662 feet, 8.7 inches. That's not that much. That's a little more than a tenth of a mile. But he did it underwater, of course, with a single breath. Held his breath for over a tenth of a mile while he swam. Stig Severinsen maybe related to Doc Severinsen from The Tonight Show, but this is Stig Severinsen. He went for a swim in La Paz, Mexico, and took only one breath before swimming the record-breaking distance with his head underwater. He said he wants his record attempt to inspire children and raise awareness of protecting oceans and undersea life. He previously broke the Guinness record for longest time holding his breath. So, guy with a lot of endurance and obviously in very good physical shape, and my hat off to him. I don't think I could hold my breath to swim over 600 feet. I'd be surprised if I could swim over 6 feet by holding my breath. Speaking of things going on in the water, police and a bomb squad responded to a river on the outskirts of a British city after a magnet fisherman reeled in 19 World War II era grenades from the body of water. Chi Williams said he was using his magnet to search for metal debris in the River Tame at a location just outside of Birmingham when he pulled the first grenade out of the water. He said he remained in the same spot and pulled up 19 grenades, which appeared to be from World War II. The magnet fisherman noticed two of the grenades still had their pins in place, leading him to contact police. Police evacuated the area, and an explosive ordnance disposal unit arrived at the scene to investigate the grenades. The team used an X-ray on the devices and determined that they did not contain explosives or detonators. Atherstone and Coles Hill Police posted photos of the grenades on Facebook, along with a reminder for residents to be careful of potentially dangerous discoveries while magnet fishing. I have not personally ever been magnet fishing, and I would say, you know, I've used a metal detector, and when you have something which can attract metal, you never know what you might get. Might be something valuable, an old coin, or metal of some kind, maybe just a big piece of copper or gold or some other metal that is worth a few bucks, or you may get something like a World War II relic. So I never quite know. So for the adventurous types, I would say, like with using a metal detector, magnet fishing may be something you may want to try. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, here in the great city of Mary Inn. Hopefully you're having a great day. You know, we get together every Monday at approximately 13 after 10 in the a.m. Eastern Time, and Tuesday and Thursday, 2:13 p.m. Eastern Time, to talk technology, current news. I tell you about my colleagues here at the radio station, and like with any show on this channel, so to speak, there's always a surprise or two. And any show featuring yours truly, there will be a wisecrack or two or three or four or many more. A North Carolina man on a lottery lucky streak collected two $1,000 prizes and a $5,000 prize and the clincher, a $100,000 prize in 2 months. Randy Sigman of Statesville, North Carolina, said his lucky streak started in November with a pair of $1,000 prizes from scratch-off tickets followed by a $5,000 win from another scratch-off game. He said his luck culminated with a $100,000 jackpot from a $20 holiday countdown ticket that he purchased at a Quick Stop in Statesville. He joked, "I have a horseshoe in my pocket." But whatever he's got in his pocket, he probably should keep it because it probably is going to be helpful to him. You know, if you like quirky news and sometimes off-the-wall happenings in the world, be sure to listen to Nate Redmond every Monday, every Wednesday. Well, you can listen Monday if you listen online, which I'll tell you about. Listen to archives. But if you want to hear him live in the studio, it's Wednesday between 4:13 p.m. and 5 in the afternoon, right here on this very same station. He also gives away prizes. So definitely an incentive to listen to Nate Redmond. Check it out, 4:13 to 5 every Wednesday afternoon. And again, if you want to listen on demand to that show, to my show, to Scott, to Linda, to any of our fine programs, go to our website, which, by the way, is produced, hosted, and maintained by yours truly, WWGH1071.com. You don't want to miss any programs on this station. You know, Scott Spears, he is the interviewer to the stars. You never know whom that guy might be talking to. Bob Barker, Kreskin, Dr. Ruth, Ed Asner, Sam Donaldson, and a lot of important local people, like our mayor, longtime mayor, Mr. Scott Scherzer, a regular guest on Scott's program. His programs, and there are hundreds available on our website, are at WWGH1071.com in the Scott Spears section. Don't want to miss that. Plus, we had the privilege of being the home of the late, great Mr. Charlie Evers. Hundreds of his programs are available also on our archives, and we do broadcast repeats of his shows several times a week here on The Talking Place. Something for everybody at this station, I tell you. My name is Adam Lepp, and on this program, we do technology news, offbeat, humorous, human interest type news stories, and always a surprise or two, peppered with regular wisecracks from my mouth. That's how we roll here on this radio station. We do have a private email server, by the way, which is also maintained and, programmed and run by yours truly. So we're just like the first ladies, because, you know, not only Hillary, but Melania Trump, who I guess won't be first lady much longer, but while she's still first lady, she does in fact have a private email server, and so do we. Send me an email. Unlike Hillary, we don't delete any of them. We read every single one of them, or at least I do. Adam@WWGH1071.com. I wonder if Jill Biden will have a private email server. That seems to be a thing with the first ladies. I think Michelle Obama probably has one. She's kind of the private email server type of gal. But we don't know if Dr. Jill Biden will have a private email server. So maybe we'll discuss that on a future program. Apple, not the fruit, not the Beatles record label, but the computer technology company. They've always got something up their sleeve, don't they? The Apple computers, you know, the iMacs, the all-in-ones, the Apple Watch, the iPad, the iPod, the iCloud. I spent a lot of money on Christmas buying an Apple product. Well, what are they up to? They are looking at putting out a self-driving car in 2024. You know, in 2024, I'm going to celebrate a big milestone birthday. Not really going to say which birthday, but it's a biggie, a big, juicy one. So if you want to buy me a big, juicy birthday present for my big, juicy birthday coming up in just a few dozen months, you may want to give this a whirl. A report that Apple is readying its own self-driving car for release in 2024 is being met with a healthy dose of skepticism by some analysts. The new vehicle for consumers would include breakthrough battery technology developed by Apple that would, quote, radically reduce the cost of batteries and increase the vehicle's driving range. The battery uses a monocell device that allows more active material to be packed into it and therefore extend its range. That's always an issue with anything with a battery. How long is it going to run? The battery-only cars, you have the Bolt and the Volt, they have various versions. Of course, a Tesla, even smaller car-like vehicles like a golf cart. Well, how far do these batteries run? You have to charge them every 40 miles. You couldn't even drive from Marion to Columbus with a 40-mile range, but do they have a 400 to 500-mile range like a regular gasoline car? Well, maybe the Apple car will do that. They're also looking at lithium ion phosphate, less likely to overheat for the battery's chemical makeup. It's also noted that it's unclear who would assemble the vehicle, but Apple is expected to work with a manufacturing partner to produce this car. Again, a 2024, they're looking at an Apple car. You know, Apple makes computers and watches, other fun stuff, and now they're getting into the car business. The report about this Apple car acknowledged that there is still a chance that Apple will pull back from its autonomous vehicle plans and just sell its autonomous driving system to a traditional automaker. Apple first set out to design their own vehicle in 2014. They've been at this for quite a while. Since then, they've engaged in automotive research and development collectively under the name Project Titan. Apple's policy is not to comment on reports about purported future products. So we take a look at what's going on through the grapevine. What do the experts think about this possible Apple vehicle? Tim Bajoran is from Creative Strategies, a technology advisory firm in California. He said, "I'm still not convinced that Apple is doing an actual car. For one thing, cars can be dangerous. Thousands of deaths each year are attributed to car accidents, and Tim Cook and Apple could never create a 100% safe car." He said, "I'm not sure that Apple wants to ever take on that kind of liability." Interesting perspective. I agree. You know, a car is a 1-2 or higher ton instrument, out of lack of a better term, that can be wonderful, can be fun, can be efficient, can be beautiful, but could also be dangerous. Computers, you know, Apple computers are more artsy than, I would say, a lot of Windows computers, but you don't really buy a computer for its looks or for its functionality. So that might be some considerations. But, you know, we shall see. A lot of smart people, innovative people, in both the programming and marketing department at Apple. Doug Betts, he's from the automotive division of J.D. Power. You know, they're big on reviewing and assessing vehicles. He explained that the products that Apple makes now don't have the kinds of safety issues that autos do. Well, you know, computer might not be good for your sanity. You might want to throw it out the window or get a sledgehammer, but it's not something that you cannot use when you're drinking, for example, or under some other kind of influence of a substance. And it's not something which, if not used properly, could be dangerous to you or people or property. So, a good point. He said, "And if an iPhone fails, you take it back to the store. Or, you know, in my case, throw it out the window, which you can do too. Cars have things that can turn into safety issues that are much more serious." Roger C. Langtot, he is the associate director for the global automotive practice at Strategy Analytics. He called a potential Apple self-driving or autonomous car a pointless endeavor, an unwanted headache, and a potentially disastrous customer experience. The iCar, of course they'd call it the iCar, right? The iPhone, the iPad, the iPod, now the iCar. It sounded sexy and exciting 5 years ago. After 5 years of frustrating iPhone experiences, Roger Langtot is not sure the market is seeking this solution anymore. Consumers are excited about companies like Rivian and Nikola and NIO and Polestar and a host of other Chinese wannabes. Plus, we now have the Ford Mach-E, and it looks like a Corvette EV is on the way. So, Apple, new battery technology. Who cares? Well, maybe that's right. Maybe they will have a negative effect on their image if they go into the car market and it's not a roaring success, because it is competitive, to put it mildly. James Hodgson is a principal analyst for smart mobility and automotive at ABI Research. He said that Apple's entry into the automotive market feels like it's been a long time coming. He said there have been some noticeable hires and some acquisitions, so they've been dancing around the edges of automotive for a while. But they have the scale and adequate cash on hand to investigate these opportunities without committing to them. He acknowledged surprise by the report that Apple would adopt a conventional vehicle manufacturing sale business model for its big entry into the automotive world. Being just another player in the market building and selling vehicles is not the angle that Apple's competitors have taken. They've taken a broad mobility play rather than the box on wheels play. He also confessed that he would be very, very surprised if Apple were to enter into the traditional automotive market. That is, build a box on wheels for as little as you can and sell it for the most you can. That would seem strange. Again, this comes from someone who should know about this, James Hodgson. He's a principal analyst for smart mobility and automotive at ABI Research. A lot of very smart people there. One reason it's strange is the size of the automotive versus the mobility market. Automotive is a $2 trillion market. Now, it wasn't like this 20 years ago, but in 2020 and 2021, the mobility market is $10 trillion. That's a lot of coinage. That's what's caused players with a technology background to enter the mobility market. Another reason it's strange are the traditional profit margins of the auto business. Traditionally, the auto market is not incredibly profitable. If you're selling products with 40% margins, why would you want to sell cars? No one has ever made a 40% margin on a car. And cars, definitely, there's not a lot of profit. A lot of it's the aftermarket. The factory authorized parts, replacement parts, upgrades, the fancy wheels, and things a dealer might sell you. Traditionally, things like rust proofing, though nowadays you don't really need to get that anymore. Other aftermarket items, even something minor like fancy floor mats or nicer seats, a premium color option. Of course, the extended warranties, and just a very different marketing landscape, and I agree with him completely. Cars versus computers. And of course, nowadays, a car essentially is a computer on wheels, but when you've been a computer and technology and software company for so long, and you go into the self-driving car market, regardless of how computerized these cars are, it is rather speculative. And right now, Apple, they want to keep their image where it is, and they're very profitable and one of the largest companies in the world. And do they really want to change that landscape? Definitely some food for thought. But, you know, if you don't take a risk, someone else is going to do it. So many signs to that coin for sure. So if the mobility market is larger and automotive market margins are thin, why build a self-driving vehicle? Apple might do this in order to avoid simply giving its billions back to its investors in the form of stock dividends, or because of an inability to identify any more attractive markets to enter or companies to buy. And I would agree, definitely. How would it affect the stock price? You know, a lot of people have made some pretty good money investing in Apple. I believe the ticker symbol is AAPL. If they don't seem as profitable because they are investing in this kind of ground floor, semi-ground floor opportunity, could go either way. So things to consider, and I'm sure a lot of your investors and fund managers will be taking that into account, and you're likely to get 10 different answers from 10 different people. The reason you see new entries, according to Mr. Hodgson, into the auto market is because of electrification. The big barrier to entering the market has been the internal combustion engine, the gas or diesel engine. Building one, making it safe and economical, meeting governmental standards is already hard. And although I'm certainly in favor of increased requirements for gas mileage, making the cars more efficient while still running well and performing and handling well, that certainly is a challenge. Now, that barrier is being removed. Tesla, there's a company that definitely is in the news all the time with their colorful and very smart big cheese, Mr. Musk. Tesla took advantage of that, the barrier that you see with the gasoline or diesel engine. It enabled it to bypass that legacy hurdle that prevented new competitors from entering the automotive market. Still, significant barriers remain. There is a complex supply chain made up of Tier 1 suppliers who integrate products from Tier 2 suppliers. There are numerous standards and regulations governing safety, emissions, and sustainability. A distribution network of dealers needs to be built, and it can take 3 to 5 years to build a vehicle that needs to survive on the road for 10 to 15 years. That's why building cars is difficult, and there are so few automakers that can do it. We're spending some time today talking about a potential Apple autonomous or self-driving electric vehicle that may be introduced in the same year I celebrate a major birthday, 2024. They've been working on this for over 6 years. Now, with Apple, their brand recognition and all the other unique things about that very innovative company, if Apple goes into automaking, it will have to offer consumers something its competitors can't. Unfortunately, Apple has nothing to offer. Most of the experiences that Apple pioneered, app access and management, content management and delivery, e-commerce, user interfaces, have been met and surpassed by competitors. But Apple is thought to be in a good position to take advantage of what's going to be important to future auto buyers. The old differentiator in automotive was an engine that's smooth and efficient and exciting. That's not going to be as important in the future. Future differentiators are going to be about compelling digital experiences. Apple also has another powerful magnet to pull people to its self-driving car. You can't undersell the power of the brand. Even if Apple just makes a car with its logo on it, people are going to be lined up to buy it, just like they're lined up at the mall now when a new iPhone comes out, or at least lined up 6 feet apart, or getting ready to purchase it on Amazon. So even just the idea, and I agree that Apple has a vehicle in the works, even if it's nothing that'll knock your socks off some issues of its own, and of course the cost, who knows what that'll be. The idea of having an Apple car like an Apple Watch or the latest and greatest Apple item will certainly be an attractive thing to many people. My name is Adam Lepp, and you are listening to The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial and broadcasting online at WWGH1071.com. We talk about technology, interesting, quirky, humorous news stories here, and always a surprise or two. And anytime you hear me on the air, it'll be peppered with my wisecracks, my dry humor, my puns, and maybe even something which you might find offensive. But that's okay. If we all agreed on everything, the world would be awfully boring. Illinois consumer Matthew Huffness says that on September 26th of 2020, he received a number of text messages on his cell phone from a company named Do Not Pay Incorporated, attempting to solicit his business. Well, you know, Matthew, I get those calls every day, and I hang up on them, I tell them wrong number, or I use language that you can't say on a family station. Sometimes I do all three of those. Taken together, the messages read, "Hey there, it's Jen from Do Not Pay. We know it's a lot to ask for your payment details up front. We really do. But here's the statistics. Do Not Pay users save an average of $450 in cold hard cash per year, sue robocallers, cancel free trials, and never have to deal with customer service again. If you aren't satisfied, we'll go ahead and delete your details and refund you in full." That sounds kind of fishy, if you want my opinion. The messages allegedly urged Mr. Huffness to sign up for the Do Not Pay app, a service chatbot that Do Not Pay bills as the world's finest robot lawyer. So it's trying to fight things that are kind of shady, and it sounds kind of shady. Well, I guess takes one to know one. That's what I wanted to say. In a technology or virtual fashion. According to Do Not Pay, the app lets users appeal parking tickets in any city in the United States, or cancel services or subscriptions, handle chargebacks and refunds, and in short, get their money back for a variety of services they signed up for, or to get free online trials of products or services. However, Do Not Pay is accused of sending the texts without first obtaining Mr. Huffness's express permission. That's the problem. That's where the credibility problem comes in. Didn't even ask for it. So, goodness sakes, they're kind of doing what they say they're going to fight. Which sounds like it's pretty shady, if you want my opinion. Together with the ask to sign up for the services, that means it's an unsolicited advertising text message which violates TCPA, the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, according to a complaint filed against Do Not Pay in early December by three law firms. The act restricts telephone solicitation activities, including the use of automated telephone equipment, artificial or pre-recorded voice messages, SMS text messages, and fax machines. So the complaint against Do Not Pay was filed in the United States District Court for the Northern District of California on behalf of Mr. Huffness and what may amount to several thousands, if not more, class members. It contends Do Not Pay launched a mass telemarketing campaign that sent text solicitations to these consumers without their prior express consent. These law firms seek to have the case declared a class action suit and are asking for $500 in damages for each member of the class. So, in this case, a profitable solicitation. So we'll see what happens. But I would agree, you know, especially when you talk about saving people money on stuff that is junk correspondence, you're doing the same thing. Doesn't sound too credible if you want my opinion. Joshua Browder is the founder of Do Not Pay. He initially launched an artificial intelligence-based app, AI-based app, they call it, to fight parking tickets 5 years ago. That's kind of a good idea, but again, he needs to watch his marketing. Plus, does it really work? You can only do so many things with a robot, regardless of how smart they would appear to be. By 2017, he had launched chatbots that covered 1,000 areas of law. The performance of Do Not Pay fluctuates wildly, according to reviews on Trustpilot. On December 17th of 2020, there were 219 reviews on Trustpilot. 57% of them rated Do Not Pay bad. That's not very good. 40% rated them excellent. So kind of one extreme or the other. And that's not really unexpected with this kind of thing. Usually you love it or you hate it. It should be noted that the majority of the Trustpilot reviews about Do Not Pay, both positive and negative, were posted by users with only that one review of Do Not Pay on Trustpilot. Most of the others had posted only two total reviews, and no posts were by users with more than four reviews. Annie Zilzrat, she is a Trustpilot user, and she said, "I just noticed the app has been charging my bank account for many, many months, even though I've never heard of them, let alone signed up. I can't cancel the subscription because I don't have an account. How they got my credit card information is beyond me and is actually super creepy. I'm not the kind of person who signs up for apps and forgets. I have literally never even seen this app or company before, yet they have a bunch of my money. Steer clear." So she's pretty cut and dry with that review. Do Not Pay's response was to tell her to contact their support team, which would help her to cancel the subscription. It did not address the question of how she had got subscribed to the service. She wrote back, "I'm not able to reply to Do Not Pay's reply, but I will say here that I cannot cancel my subscription because I've never made one. I don't have an account and have thoroughly checked to confirm this, and yet my card goes on getting charged every month." Several other complaints on Trustpilot relate to consumers being unaware they would have to pay for Do Not Pay's service, and the company responded that it would work with them to rectify the matter. Michael Jude, a tech expert, and we quote him a lot on this program, he said it's very hard to determine that Do Not Pay is a fee-based service on their webpage. Nowhere in the terms and conditions is the fee stated. This could be a case of misleading advertising. However, he said it's possible consumers will be told Do Not Pay is a fee-based service when they sign up. The positive ratings, according to Michael Jude, all seem to be associated with terminating spam email and texts. Wouldn't you love to get rid of all the spam? I have my customers asking me that all the time, and I can only do so much. Even the best spam filters like the ones that I use are not perfect. The sleazy operators always find a way to get around them. But, you know, it's a tug of war of sorts, and that's kind of how a lot of IT stuff is. So anyway, there's an irony for you. Assuming that case cited finds the chatbot to be spam, then it would be spam against spam. Now, wouldn't that be kind of amusing? Do Not Pay and its founder, Joshua Browder, have not responded to requests to provide comments to these issues. If you want my opinion, Crowder may be crowding a courtroom or even maybe a jail cell with his escapades. And I would definitely stay away from Do Not Pay. It's an app that I would say do not use. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial and broadcasting online by the power and the magic of the internet, as I like to say, at WWGH1071.com. Be sure to listen to the Mike Wilson program every Monday between 5:13 p.m. and 6 in the late afternoon. He has interesting guests from the Morrow and Marion County areas, and like myself, not one to shy away from a wisecrack or a pun or silly or sometimes controversial comment. And his programs, dozens of them, are available on the website, WWGH1071.com. The North Carolina Department of Transportation is auctioning off some unusual memorabilia, retired train cars from the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. Jason Orthner, director of the North Carolina Department of Transportation Rail Division, said that the department has purchased the circus's fleet of train cars for just over $380,000 when the circus disbanded in 2017. The department had initially planned to refurbish the cars and add them to its fleet, but the plans were put on hold when officials calculated the cost. Orthner said the department recently obtained $157 million in federal funding to replace the fleet, so plans to restore the circus cars were canceled, and officials decided to sell them instead. The cars, or some are still painted with animals and other circus imagery, are being auctioned on North Carolina's surplus site. He told the TV station tourist, railroad operations, car collectors, and other enthusiasts would certainly be interested in these items. There are operations around the country that run train service for excursion purpose or other purposes that would be interested in equipment like this. So, if you're interested in some circus and railroad memorabilia, there you go. We went southeast, now let's go northeast to the great state of New York. A New York State couple said they ripped up some rotten wood at their recently purchased home. And you know, when you rip up an older house, take some items apart, the flooring, the walls, you never know what you might find. Maybe something valuable, maybe something scary. Anyway, they ripped up some rotten wood at their recently purchased home and made a discovery, a bootlegger's stash of whiskey from 100 years ago. You know, how much would a 100-year-old scotch cost? I know 25-year-old scotch isn't cheap, but it sure tastes good. 100-year-old scotch, well, that might be more than my car is worth. Nick Drummond and Patrick Baker said they had heard while preparing to purchase their home in Ames, New York, that it might have belonged to a bootlegger in the 1920s. It was sort of the local urban legend that it was built by a bootlegger, said Nick Drummond. We went with it, but we also knew that this was totally made up. They discovered the story was true when they ripped up some rotten wood skirting in the house's mudroom, and something fell out. What fell out was a package containing 6 bottles of whiskey. They wondered whether there were more hidden bottles. There's this hatch in the floor, this wood hatch. We knew about it. It wasn't like it was particularly well hidden. We're like, so now we have to climb in the hatch. The two gentlemen went down into the hatch and discovered a hidden storage space between the mudroom floor filled with bottles. In fact, they counted about 100 total bottles of whiskey. Nick Drummond said he did some research and determined that the house was built in 1915 by German immigrant Adolf Humpfner, who apparently operated an illegal whiskey ring during the Prohibition years. The men said some of the bottles still have labels identifying them as a blended Gaelic whiskey from Scotland. So 100-year-old scotch, I bet that would be quite valuable and possibly quite tasty. The bottles bear dates from the 1920s. Not sure if scotch that old would be good or would be kind of sour, or who knows. Anyway, the men said they have not tried any of the whiskey from the intact bottles, but they are considering auctioning off some of the bottles that are in good condition at some time in the future. The two gentlemen are now chronicling the house's restoration and discoveries they make along the way on Instagram. You know, in 2020, 2021, you can go ahead and blog on Instagram, Twitter, Parler, Facebook, whatever your favorite social media apps and platforms are. That's how we roll. You know, here at the station, we're constantly making posts on Facebook telling you about past, present, and future programs. So please do follow us. Become a fan. We have thousands of fans. Look up WWGH 107.1. You can always send me an email. Let me know what you think. Again, that's on our esteemed and sometimes infamous private email server, adam@WWGH1071.com. I certainly hope 2021 is a good year for you. Just like in 2020 and previous years, we have lots of great radio programming for you, special events, Scott Spears with more of his celebrity guests, and always a wisecracker too, and pretty much every day we have a surprise in store. If you'd like to become a supporter of this program, that would be fantastic. You know, it'll cost less than you think it will, and it's well worth it. We have a lot of listeners. We have listeners all over the world, people who listen online to the show archives or listen the old-fashioned way on the regular transistor radio or car radio or other type of FM radio. Send an email to me, adam@WWGH1071.com. If you become a supporter, I will mention you, your business, your organization, or if you can be a personal supporter, regularly during my program on my own websites, and I have several of them, on the station's website and, of course, on our Facebook and also on the air during the day. It would be a wise way to economically and responsibly promote yourself, business, or organization. And on that note, I want to thank you again for listening to this program here on WWGH Radio every Monday, 10:13 a.m. and Tuesday and Thursday, 2:13 approximately in the p.m. as we talk about technology news, current events, unusual, quirky, humorous, lighter side of the news, and who knows what else. Always peppered with regular comments, wisecracks, and sarcasm and jokes and puns from yours truly. Please, if you are out driving sometime, tonight, tomorrow, for a holiday, for a birthday, or just because you like to cruise around like I like to do, please don't drink and drive, nor the way to say it. Drinking and driving is stupid. It's irresponsible. And if you get caught, it's very expensive. You might lose your license. So again, call an Uber or Lyft if it's not far, walk, or, of course, take the bus or have a designated driver. That's some of the best advice I can give you as we enter the year 2021. Adam Lepp, thanking you for listening. AdamTheComputerGuy.com.
Do you ever ponder? Do you ever wonder? Do you ever question? Did my server serve me? Your computer will print. Should you call the president? What in the world are you gonna do? Call Adam, the computer guy. Call Adam. Don't know the reason why. Do you find it a waste of time? Because you cannot hear online. Call Adam, the computer guy. Or go online to AdamTheComputerGuy.com. There's a click of the mouse.
See you later, alligator. After a while, crocodile. What she told me nearly made me lose my head. When I thought of what she told me nearly made me lose my head. But the next time that I saw her, reminded her of what she said. See you later, alligator. Wait a minute, Gator. I know you mean it just for play.